Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's a great pleasure to talk to you today and give you some of our initial thinking about the Tata Cornell program and what we hope to achieve with this program over the next several years, hopefully decades. Maybe not me doing it over the decades, but the program going over the decades. It's been really fun the last few months coming into an academic environment and setting up this program. For those of you who may not know, the Tata Cornell Initiative on Agriculture and Nutrition is an initiative that was set up with a very generous endowment from the Tata Trust, which is chaired by Ratan Tata. And Ratan Tata, as you may know, is an alumni of Cornell University, 1962, I think, when he graduated from here. He felt quite strongly that there's something wrong in India. You have a country that's growing rapidly, and there's enormous progress on several fronts, but it's a country where poverty, hunger, malnutrition continue to be stubbornly high, and very little change that's been taking place. So the idea behind this endowment was to figure out a way in which we can bring the best of Cornell expertise to address this persistent problem of poverty, malnutrition in India. And that's what I've been really honored to lead, and it's something that I've been very excited about. So as all of you know, India is a very complex country. It's a country where when you land in India, you at the same time think this is a country that's moving rapidly and this is a country that's falling behind. It's a country where you see rapid economic growth rate consistently over the past 20 years. There's been per capita GDP growth rates of 6% or higher. But it's also a country where we've seen, as I mentioned, very high poverty and malnutrition. It's a country where the Green Revolution was pioneered. And it's a country that showed that technological change can make an enormous difference for overall food security. But it's also a country with lagging regions where agriculture productivity growth rates continue to be very low and yield levels continue to be at the level they were during the pre-Green Revolution period. So that continues to be an amazing dichotomy that we see. There's very strong private R&D that's taking place in India. But at the same time, very little investments on crops or traits that are important to the poor. And something that we need to be concerned about. We see rapid diet diversification taking place. Supermarkets spreading across the country, booming, and giving you all types of diets. But at the same time, very poor rural infrastructure, very poor rural markets, and access to markets being a major problem for smallholder agriculture systems. You see rising literacy, especially for women. Any little village you go to and you pop into the school, you see more girls than you see boys. That's a big change. But it's also a country where women's empowerment is probably the lowest. And that's a major puzzle as we look ahead. And I'll come back to women's empowerment several times in my talk. But I also am very positive about the future of India. I'm very positive because, one, after a long time, there's new recognition that agriculture is important. There's new recognition that we need to do something about the problem of malnutrition. All the way from the Prime Minister of India down, the leadership the political leadership has been talking about doing something about malnutrition in India. And that's a big change. We see also significant new investments taking place in agriculture, rural infrastructure, roads, transport, etc. But I think one of the big new things is the growing urban middle class. Urban middle class populations are now in the order of 300 to 400 million people. And that's a big, big change. And as this urban middle class populations grow, as they grow richer, their consumption of a diverse diet, their consumption of a large quantity of very diverse diets can be the engine of growth for smallholder agriculture. And we need to figure out a way to connect smallholders to this growing urban population. Innovations in technology, especially genomics, etc., and the biofortification work can make a big difference, and we see big progress taking place. And the other big progress is in ICTs. And I'll come back to ICTs. And the way cell phones and ICT technologies are now spreading across rural India. Finally, you do see rapid feminization of agriculture taking place. As men move into the cities, you see women doing much of the farming and women managing rural change. And I'll come back and talk about the growing strength of women's organizations and how we should be tapping into them. So, what we are trying to do in the Tata Cornell program is to try and address this problem of persistent malnutrition in India, but address it through agriculture pathways, looking at ways in which agriculture can make a difference in reducing malnutrition. So what we've spent a lot of time doing over the last couple of months is to think through an overall conceptual framework that brings the various dimensions of addressing malnutrition together, and trying to tease out all of the interventions that are necessary in order to get to improved individual nutrition. If you can't read through this, don't worry. The same graph is on our website, and I'll give you the link to the website, and so you can look through it in more detail. But essentially, what we're trying to do is tease out the differential effects of improvements in household income, primarily through productivity growth and off-farm employment in rural populations, access to micronutrients and food-based interventions, including things like government-provided subsidized food schemes, etc., intra-household allocation of food, especially looking at the way in which women and children get adequate access to quantity, quality, and diversity of food. And finally, looking at nutrient absorption issues, especially the important role played by water and sanitation, and how all of these come together in manifesting themselves in improved nutrition, and the role that policy plays in promoting the various factors to work together, the way institutions work, the way culture and behavioral norms need to be changed in order to make that difference in productivity, in improving nutrition. Now, as we think about an overall framework, we then need to say, what do we do within that framework? So we started off by looking at what are all the various global programs doing. There are lots of global programs, MDG programs, country-specific program, cross-country programs, etc. But try to put these global programs together to create a whole. There's no way in which these programs add up. Each program is completely siloed. Each program has different objectives, different goals, and a way in which to get from a hunger program or a women's empowerment program, a maternal health program, all of these to come together and say, what does this mean for a malnourished child? We have no way to get to that malnourished child through these programs. And that's been a disappointment. When you look at a country level, you have the exact same disappointment. There are many, many programs in India. There's programs around rural employment, there's programs around rural livelihoods, agriculture productivity improvement, horticulture improvement, public distribution system of food grains, food security missions, integrated child development schemes, midday meal schemes, all the way down to water and sanitation programs. But every single program is run by a different ministry. Every single program is run by a different department. And at any given village level, you have all these programs tripping over each other without common goals, common objectives, and without a coherent strategy. So if we want to make a difference, we need to figure out a way in which all these programs come together. Now, we as international people are no different. If you go to India, there's a whole bunch of international programs running. The CGIAR system has its own programs, the World Bank has its programs, and the Gates Foundation, of course, has its own programs, etc. And none of them all talk to each other. So one of the things we did on my trip to India is we actually got all of these people into the same room and had a conversation about what each one was doing. And that was extremely illuminating. So in this very crowded space, we're trying to create a very unique program and a program that complements the work that's going and adds to the whole rather than subtracts from it. So what we did at the very start was to say, let's get out there on the ground and get a feel for what's really going on and get a feel for what difference we can make. So Bhaskar Mitra, who's sitting right there. Bhaskar, who's the associate director of the Tata Cornell program, and myself, we got into a car just around Aurangabad here, and then we started to drive. And we drove across Maharashtra down to Hyderabad, and then up through Orissa, Jharkhand, and then in a previous visit, we also did Patna. So overall, we drove 4,000 kilometers. And those of you who've driven in India know driving 4,000 kilometers can be quite an incredible time. And we visited about 20 locations where lots of different work was going on. And we visited locations where it's very much commercial-oriented agriculture systems, cotton, soybean systems, tribal populations, subsistence production systems, some of the green revolution areas and the post-green revolution areas, etc. And in each place, we sat down with groups of farmers and we spent a lot of time talking through what were the primary constraints to productivity growth, what were the primary constraints to access to food, intra-household distribution issues, health issues, etc. And that was extremely useful to get that information. And then we spent, as I said, time with other people, other partners, trying to figure out whether we're getting our information right or not. So as we came out of that trip, saying that our goal, the goal of the Tata Cornell Initiative, is to reduce stunting and malnutrition among children. That's the ultimate goal that we're interested in. And in order to get there, we need to be addressing the very critical period of the first 1,000 days of a child's life. Right from the period of conception through to the second birthday of the child. And that's the critical period where stunting is prevented. That's the critical period where you can ensure that a child will grow into a healthy adult. And so we focused on that period. But as you focus on that period, it becomes very clear that to have a healthy conception, to have a healthy birth, and to have a child reaching a second birthday in good health and good nutrition and not be stunted requires first and foremost a healthy mother. A healthy mother, a mother with good nutrition. And that's the basis of getting the healthy child. And so we very quickly came to the conclusion that our target population that we need to be working on is women of childbearing age. So we focused our efforts, we want to focus our efforts on women in the age group 15 to 45 years. That's the group that's going to make the biggest impact on reducing stunting, on improving overall child nutrition. So that's what the program's going to do. We're looking at overall reduction in stunting. Target population of women 15 to 45 years. And the mechanisms that we would see in influencing this group is the agriculture-based mechanisms, improved food supply and improved household income, household access to micronutrients through improved diversity of diets, etc., intra-household allocation of food, particular emphasis on improving access to food for women and children, and finally, ensuring an environment where proper nutrient absorption and utilization can happen. And what that means is ensuring good water and sanitation practices, good infrastructure for clean water and improved sanitation. Those are the mechanisms that we would see resulting in improved overall welfare for women and thereby for the children. And the two outcomes that we would track are dietary diversity and nutrition uptake. So we'll come back, we'll keep talking through this. So as we talked through the program, we decided that our program would work around five major thematic areas. And the thematic areas being around agriculture-led growth strategies, looking at the effectiveness of food-based interventions and micronutrient programs. Food-based interventions such as the subsidized food grain schemes in India, etc. Looking at positive nutrition behavior change and water sanitation and nutrition practices, and the connection between water sanitation and nutrition, water sanitation and improved nutrition. And finally, a thematic area around improved metrics, because metrics continues to be lagging behind in all of the work that's going on in agriculture and nutrition. So let me spend a few minutes talking through these parts. First, let me start with the metrics. So one of the surprises I had coming into this program was how much we talk about the fact that agriculture is important for nutrition improvement, but how little actual evidence exists to make the link between agriculture and improved nutrition. You find that there are lots of very good household agriculture surveys in India, good panel data from ICRISAT, from NCAR, lots of other organizations. Surprisingly, none of them have nutrition data that's useful in any way in making the link between agriculture and nutrition. Same time, you've got lots of very good health surveys, lots of very good nutrition surveys. None of them have any agriculture data. So one of the challenges that I think we need to take on is how do you get a minimum core set of nutrition data that you can tag on to an agriculture survey? And similarly, is there a minimum core set of agriculture data that you can tag on to a nutrition survey? If you can do that, then we can once and for all address this issue of this pathway between agriculture and nutrition. Now, the challenge is getting that core minimum data. What I'm thinking about is a one-page addition to an existing questionnaire. And what I'd like to do is get a group of nutritionists to sit down with us and come up with that one pager. And we'd like to go out into the field and test this out and then promote the idea of adding this to other agriculture surveys. Similarly, I want to do the same thing with a group of agriculturalists and get another one pager that we can tag on to nutrition surveys. This sounds simple, but I can guarantee you getting to that one page is going to be a major issue. So that's what I'm after now. Second, in the area of agriculture-led growth strategies, one of the issues that we're beginning to observe when you drive through India, especially when you drive through the progressive states of India, Maharashtra being one of them, what you find is large parts of the agricultural areas are being grown to more commercialized crops. Even smallholders, even tribal populations are very much connected to the market. So in Maharashtra, you can drive, and we drove over 10 days, and all we saw was cotton and soybean. Cotton, soybean. I got a bit sick of cotton and soybean. You couldn't see anything else. And so we kept saying, if you're really concerned about malnutrition, and if farmers are growing cotton and soybean, then how do you translate the cash income that you get from selling cotton and soybean into improved nutrition? So are there ways in which you see that transition taking place from commercial farming into improved nutrition? Or do you see a negative effect of commercialization of agriculture on nutrition? That's a question. We don't have an answer to this question, but it's a question that needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed both in the sense of supply of food, but it also needs to be addressed in terms of who controls the cash. Because food is controlled by women in the household. But when you go to cash, the control switches to the man. So how do you account for that? And the competing demands for cash, for education, for health, all other factors. So there's a big set of issues around commercialization of agriculture and nutrition that we need to address. Second, we need to address new opportunities for smallholders to connect into markets. You do see this growth in supermarkets taking place. So how do you get smallholders to benefit from that? What are the opportunities for doing it? What are the opportunities for off-farm employment? And how does that then translate to remittances into the farm household, and how does that translate into improved nutrition? And seasonality issues come in also, both in terms of agriculture production, but also seasonality in terms of off-farm employment opportunity. The second big area is, or the third big area, is around biofortification and micronutrient issues. So what we find here is there's a lot of work going on biofortification. We spent 2 days in a company called Nirmal Seeds, which is now selling biofortified pearl millet. So that's one of the first biofortified food crops that's being sold in India today. This is not GM. This is straight traditional breeding, just to be clear. Jerry Haas from the nutrition division here in Cornell has done the efficacy work on how does biofortified pearl millet translate into access to improved nutrition for women. And he found that the efficacy was very high. Now, the next stage in biofortification is how do you get improved effectiveness, how do you get adoption, how do you get impact in terms of overall population level improvements in nutrition for, especially for women and then for children. So that's something that I think needs to be done. And we have a great opportunity because biofortified pearl millet's just about to take off. And so if we get in on the ground and start doing some tracking, we can track the entire change that happens in this time period. The second set of issues to look at, and that of course then brings us into getting partnerships with public-private sector in promoting not just biofortified pearl millet, but several other biofortified crops that are in the pipeline. The second issue is around the government programs themselves, which are targeting improved nutrition at the community level. And as I told you, these are all disparate programs, all working in different ways with different objectives, etc. And I think there's a great opportunity to try and figure out how one can build convergence across these programs. And whether we can take a few locations and actually engineer that convergence and see how that can then lead to lessons more broadly. Then the one area that I really want to talk about today is about behavior change. Something that just absolutely amazed me on this trip was the growing strength of women's organizations in India. Women's organizations in rural areas are actually making change happen. They are not just organizing agriculture, they're organizing overall community growth and community development that's taking place. And village after village, we visited with these women's organizations and we came back absolutely amazed. What we need to do is get to these women's organizations and work with them and figure out how they can be conduits for messages on behavior change, on agriculture and nutrition, and on how to treat pregnant women, what are some of the behaviors around water and sanitation, etc., etc. I think this is an area where the nutrition group within Cornell, the communications group within Cornell, the agriculture groups within Cornell, all of these groups can coalesce together to really create a major force through these women's group. And I think that's something that we should be moving forward on very quickly, and I'm really excited about this work. And one of the reasons I'm excited about it is marrying this work on women's organizations with some of the advances that are taking place in digital technologies. Some of you may have heard of from the work of Rikin Gandhi in India, the work of Digital Green, where they've been working with groups such as these, and they're getting women to tell their own stories about some of the change that they're making. And then taking videos of them, women taking their own videos of some of the changes that they're working on. And then having discussions around it. And then uploading those videos onto YouTube. So if you go to YouTube today and go to Digital Green, there are about 6,000 such videos there. Now, here is an enormous opportunity not just to make a change in one village, but to scale this up across villages. So that's something we're really excited about and something we'd like to work with them on. The last area is water and sanitation. And as you all know, the ability of the body to absorb the nutrients and to convert that into health, etc., depends a lot on the environment that food is consumed in, the environment in which people live, etc. Clean drinking water is a big part of that. Access to toilets and better sanitation is a big part of that. And the behavior change is a big part of that. And that's something we need to work on, and we need to do a lot of work. Some of the work that Cornell's already doing through Agua Clara of bringing clean drinking water into households is an area that we believe we need to capitalize on. Here's some work that Agua Clara is doing, where they've just started to work on building wells, which then pumps water up into a tank, filters it, and moves it into rural households. The first such Agua Clara plant in India is going to be commissioned by the end of this month. Probably a second one coming up next month. And so what we are trying to do is work with Agua Clara here to figure out a way in which water, sanitation, and nutrition can all sync up together and figure out how that happens. Just very quickly, the locations that we are looking at is in three states, Maharashtra, Orissa, and Jharkhand. And in each of these areas, we'll start with a particular thematic focus, but then spread this across to all the other areas. And then we'll have a pan-India focus around metrics. And that's something we're starting to work on already. I'm coming to an end soon. So the way this program is designed, we're not going to have any permanent staff that will be there in this program. What we hope to do is to resource our work through the work of students, PhD students, master students. They'll be the main driving force for the work that we do. And there'll be students from Cornell, but also students from India, plus TCI fellows who'll be postdocs, visiting scientists, etc., and TCI faculty fellows. Cornell faculty members who are already working with us, providing significant amount of their time in collaborative work in India, and others who want to continue doing work in India with us in this program. So that's the mechanism that we're using to move forward. We are also trying to tease out who the major collaborators in India are going to be for us. And today, when we think about where most of our efforts going, TISS is a major landing spot for us. ICRISAT is another big collaboration institute. But then we're also working with a whole group of other organizations. And we'll continue building our relationship with these and others. Just very quickly, we've got the website up and running. Lots of useful information there. A lot of what I've talked about is on the website. Please visit the site and you'll see a lot more information there. And we've also got a very active blog that's been going on. We've been blogging all the way through the travel in India. And since then, we've had other people who've discovered this blog, and we're getting some great blogs on agriculture and nutrition in India that's happening. Really fun reading, I must say. So please look for that. And with that, let me say thank you so much. The blog connection and the website URLs are listed up here. Thank you. Thank you.
Prabhu, you and your team have put some excellent thought into this initiative, but you can imagine there are lots of questions that come from the audience. So why don't we open it up? We have about a 15-minute span before we transition out this room. Who among you have the first question? Yes?
Yes. Thank you so much. I'm really glad this is so comprehensive approach. I'm from the and we are trying to
Should I take?
Yeah, let's just do one at a time.
So, no, I think that's great. great questions. We can't do any of this without governments being part of it. So, much of what we're doing at the local level is trying to work with local governments, district governments, etc. But my dream is to have a few areas where we can bring many of these big government programs together into convergent activities and have action research around that. And my next set of visits into India is to figure out how to get governments much more connected in that area. Second, you know, most of my work up to now has been on Africa. And so I'm inclined to sort of go back into Africa. And what I'd like to do is use the TCI work over the next few years to figure out new learnings, new modalities, and then figure out how I can bring this back into Africa. So that's where we're going with this.
Thanks for that nice framework, too. In the mineralization sector, I appreciate you're making water, sanitation, and nutrition, but I feel like maybe something's missing in terms of food safety.
Absolutely, and very important, and we do have food safety up there on the side, and we need to get a better sense of, at the community level, what are the food safety issues we need to be looking at. I just don't have a good enough sense yet. I did talk to some people about the mycotoxin issue and trying to get a good sense of which mycotoxin is important for the crops that are being grown in these areas, because I know aflatoxin is important for maize and peanuts, but I don't know for Indian situations what mycotoxins are.
Let's go to the back of the room, yes?
So you mentioned that the link between agriculture and nutrition is poorly defined at this point. In the last systematic review in 2012, didn't conclude that agriculture can't be used to improve nutrition, but rather that the research methods were quite flawed. So you mentioned your outcomes of interest in dietary diversity and nutrient uptake, and I was just wondering if you could talk more about how you're going to, the research methods, and how you're going to establish efficacy of the program.
For me to get to research methods.
Okay.
Right now we've said these are the issues we need to address, and now that's the next stage that we're going to. And we'll be looking at, and that's part of the core metrics that on nutrition that we'll try to get onto agriculture surveys, identify, you know, should we be measuring numbers of food groups consumed, or what's the diet diversity indicators to look at, etc. And I'll be able to give you a better answer in a few months.
Yeah, I have a question right here.
I guess first I want to say that it's so clear. You spoke about the biofortification aspects of the nutrition, and you said that that particularly can benefit women. Can you speak to the link between those two things?
Biofortification? So, if you think about iron status of women, but I don't know whether these numbers are right or wrong, but these are the numbers that are there, which is about 70 to 75% of Indian women are iron deficient. And if that's the case, then you need to say, what are the mechanisms for improving access to iron, improving overall iron in their blood and systems, etc. And one can think about various opportunities to do that, supplementation systems, iron tablets, etc. But if you think about rural populations, rural women, then one of the mechanisms to do this is through biofortifying the grain that they consume. And iron, pearl millet with high iron content is one way to do it. And some of the efficacy work that's been done has shown that through the biofortified pearl millet, you're actually able to double the amount of iron intake in the diet of women. So that's the pathway we're talking about.
Do you know what's on this side of the room? Let's go to Phil, and then we'll go to the front row here.
Much. I was very interested to hear that you had got a lot of the bigger players together to discuss working in a more unified direction. Did you get a sense that people were with you and that you were ready to collaborate in a more unified way going ahead, or was it going to, it was everybody going to scatter again and do their own thing?
We all talked about how important it is for us to work together. I don't think that was the first meeting, and so we didn't go beyond saying, you know, boy, this would be great if we can all do something together. Last week there was a meeting of agriculture and nutrition in Bonn that I was in, and we got a subset of that group who was in Bonn together again, and we agreed that in Orissa let's try to do something more concrete. So one or two of those groups were going running off to do different things, so we all agreed that let's all at least do it together. So it's a start. It's a long way, as you all know, and as a former donor, I know how different donors can have different perspectives and can be part of this pulling people apart thing also. So it's something we're trying to sort out. Appreciate the question.
Let me go to the lady in the front row here, then we go to Professor Venice.
I understand that your target age, your target audience is women from 15 to 45. And I know this isn't the area that you presented on, but I think it's really important to talk about population control and sort of birth control and making it more available. And I was wondering if any of the groups that you had listed in your framework were working on that or what your opinion was.
None of the groups that we visited were directly working on population control issues. But there is a fairly active set of activities around access to birth control, etc., that's going on parallel to our work in many of these areas. So, but we didn't really link up with that.
Yeah, thank you for this. Maybe some clarification. I see an emphasis on households and communities. What I haven't heard is things like climate change or land use, use of water resources other than for drinking water, for irrigation or drainage.
Yeah.
Is that not part of the picture? Are you trying to focus so that you don't get diluted too much? Or can you explain that?
So, just thinking through agriculture pathways to improve nutrition, we felt we needed to work at this community level and try to figure out these pathways and the differences that can be made. But as a profession, I'm an agricultural economist, and most of my work is on policy. So a lot of what would come out from my own contribution to this is linking this back to the policy work. And that's the way I would scale this up, in terms of food policy, agriculture policy, etc. So that's a simple answer to your question. I don't anticipate that our program will take a much broader macro resource look at issues. Although I am playing with the idea of having some work on climate change going on the side, which tries to look at, you know, what are some of the longer term climate implications on agriculture systems and therefore the risks associated with access to food, access to nutrition, etc. But I think I'm still about 6 months away from even defining what I have in mind.
Well, we have a final question, and that goes to John
Buster. John.
A couple of questions, probably the first one is, it strikes me that there are some successful examples of agricultural interventions that have affected nutrition. For example, selenium in Finland, that was through fertilization to increase selenium content in wheat, and deliberately was chosen over the food fortification strategy. Iodine in parts of China, another one. So, but it strikes me that you have to have a clear understanding of what is the limiting nutritional issue that you need to address. and that, you know, is it iron or is it something else? But without that, I think that you will have no focus to an agricultural program, and I think that's a lot of the struggle. Because I agree entirely with Harold that, to me, the weakness in the program to date has been that there is no agriculture in it. You know, so basically, it's a bit of a paradox given the title. So I would urge that you push the nutritionist to really say, what do we want? Do we want more protein? Do we want iron? Do we want zinc? Do we want whatever? But and then think of agricultural strategies for those nutrients. But then secondly, this public distribution system provides calories and things, sugar, oils, and grains. Is there, do you have any sense that within the policymakers of India, they would be receptive to, say, bringing in something like grain legumes into that public distribution system that would then have potentially a health impact and also an impact on the agricultural system?
Thanks, John. I gave this similar talk to the nutrition division a month ago, and they said, you're only talking agriculture, there's no nutrition. So I'm really shocked to hear you say there's no agriculture in my talk. So thank you. I can't understand that there's no, maybe there's no physical agriculture science in this. Maybe that's true, and I take that as given. I'm not doing physical agriculture science here. There are lots of other places where it's done, but I'm happy to talk to you all individually to see if there are particular interventions that can come into this framework. So happy to talk to Harold and John and anybody else here on that. But talk to the nutrition people. They'll tell you this is only agriculture. Second, on the PDS system. The PDS system is a really interesting case, and I blogged about it while I was traveling. Now, just for you to everybody to get the same sense here, what the PDS system is doing is it's giving you 15 kilograms of rice or wheat at around 2 rupees per kg each month. That's compared to a market price of about 20 rupees a kg. So, and 15 kilograms worked out to about half of the monthly requirement of a typical household. The other thing is, everywhere we went and we asked about, is the PDS system working? The answer was invariably yes. It's working well, we're getting the grain, there's no problem. Now, I do not need to be told about wastage and inefficiency and all of that. I accept all of that. But at the community level, poor households are actually accessing this grain. Now what this has meant is that they're actually saving half of what they spent on grain in the past. That's where your diet diversification is coming from. Because what's happening is they're now spending more on non-staples. They're spending on vegetables and higher protein, etc. And that's a trend we're seeing. And if you look at the ICRISAT household surveys, they actually show you that. The expenditure on non-staples has gone up quite significantly. So that's one response to your question. The second is, there's some experimentation going on now in bringing traditional millets, etc., into the PDS system. Not yet nationwide, but there's certain pockets where that kind of experimentation is going on. So there's, as you go to this new food security, implementing the new food security bill, you're going to see a lot more of that discussion taking place.